Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in and for listening to us. I'm excited about the program today and about looking at the critical information we have before us. But before we get started, I'm Isaac Crockett, and our three regular co-hosts are not able to be with us. They're at different functions ministering, and so I'm filling in today for them. And joining me is Dr. Keith Wiebe, who is our vice president at American Pastors Network, the vice president of chapter development. And so he and I will be co-hosting today, and we have a special guest who will be coming up in just a little bit, retired Lieutenant Colonel Oscar Rivera, retired from the Pennsylvania State Police, still active as the vice president at WSK & Associates, a security firm. And so we have a lot of things to talk about, but as we get started, I kind of want to turn it over to Keith and just spend a little bit of time talking about our ministry here at the American Pastors Network. Yesterday, our president, Sam Rohr, was on and talking about some things he had going on yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And so, Keith, could you maybe talk a little bit about this event that Sam Rohr mentioned at the Answers in Genesis Ark Encounter that will be happening today?
I'd be happy to, Isaac, and welcome as well on my behalf to everyone that's on the broadcast. One of the things that is critical to APN is a biblical worldview. We talk about that a lot, and it simply means that we view the world around us, whether it's current events, personal life events, relationships, or whatever it is, through the grid of a biblical worldview. Two ministry organizations that are really at the forefront of that are one, Answers in Genesis, located in the Cincinnati, Ohio area, and the other one, Bob Jones Press, represented in the marketing world by Precept. And Sam today is at an event that's being hosted by the Ark Encounter, a ministry of Answers in Genesis, and also put on by Precept. And the whole focus of 2 days is on a biblical world view. Ken Ham, who is the president of Answers in Genesis, has been trumpeting this for many years. He starts with the premise that the Bible is the inerrant, authoritative word of God, beginning with verse 1 in Genesis 1. And therefore, taking the account of creation as representing 6 literal 24-hour days, a biblical worldview being that which takes the Bible literally, unless it indicates that it should be taken otherwise. Taking it in its literal sense, someone has often observed that makes the best sense. Sam is there to lend his support. George Barna, who is often on this program, is there as well. And among other things, they will have the opportunity to have a tour of the Ark. And I will just say for our listening audience, if you have the opportunity to visit the Creation Museum or the Ark Encounter, you by all means want to take it. Sam's presence there just indicates and amplifies our commitment to straining everything we talk about on this program, current events, including our topic today, through the grid of a biblical worldview.
Wow. And, you know, I would say both of those ministries have helped my life and church. I homeschool 2 of my children, our school age, and we homeschool them with the BJU Press curriculum. And I've also taken my family to the Answers in Genesis Museum, the Creation Museum. We haven't been to the Ark Encounter yet. And so I'm excited for Sam, excited to hear what's going to happen there. And it's a very exciting times to see these connections with our network. Well, before we get into the material for today we're really going to be looking at a constitutional and biblical defense of self-defense. But before we do that, I want to look at what's going on in the news, and it's amazing that it's still in the news, but the NFL and this deal with the anthem is full force today as the head of the NFL is meeting with players, current and past players, today in New York City to discuss this. And we've seen it trickle down through college and high school and even the Pee Wee League, people kneeling during the anthem. And I'm just curious, we've talked about this quite a bit on our show, but Keith, I'm just wondering, from your view, do you think that there are outside groups? We've already said that many of the players involved in this don't realize really what's going on. They really don't understand what's happening. But do you think there are people who are purposely setting the NFL up against their own base, their own conservative people that watch them, in an attempt to ruin the NFL, as some have suggested?
You know, I think that's very possible. I could not point you to specific circumstances, but it strikes me that this is far too spontaneous appearing to really be all of that spontaneous. And there's no issue with people having the right to protest in our country. Our culture is based upon that. We have the freedom of speech. That's part of it. The flag is such a picture of what our nation is and what it stands for. And to protest, and I was reading that they are protesting the fact that our country oppresses people. Well, our country is built on the premise that all are created equal. Now, there's oppression going on the part of individuals. There is oppression that goes on the part of groups, people who live and act in prejudicial ways because of their own selfishness. Ultimately, we believe theologically, because of the curse of sin. And there are those that would want to sow dissent. Those who want to preach to us to be tolerant are very intolerant of people who stand for truth. So it wouldn't surprise me at all that there aren't some folks that are stirring and trying to make it appear as this all happens at once, like so many of the protests that happen across the country about a lot of things. We find out that there's some organizers behind that are trying to disrupt things.
I do find it interesting. I've had several friends from other countries tell me before that they think of football as uniquely American, much more than any other sport. But the whole issue, and yesterday it came again to the front because Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump see these two things very differently. And President Trump kind of went after some quotes that were being given to him by the press from Hillary Clinton, that she was saying that it's not disrespectful to our flag what they're doing. I would like to just ask our special guest, kind of bring him in a little early here. But Oscar, you've spent most of your life in law enforcement, and you've watched so many men and women that work with you or around you not return home from their work. What do you think? How do you feel when you see these celebrity athletes disrespecting the flag at NFL games when, you know, for example, the Dallas Cowboys were denied the opportunity to respect the fallen Dallas police officers here recently in the last season or two?
Isaac, thank you for having me, first of all. But obviously my opinion on the issue is that as a society, as a nation, we should obviously, any time our national anthem is played or our flag is displayed as part of that playing of the anthem, we should stand. But that's just my opinion. So until recently, really, it was one of the few things which united us as a nation in spite of all our differences. But beyond that, the thing that I find very sad about it that makes me somewhat perplexed is a lot of these people don't know why they're protesting. And unfortunately, because our society mimics what goes on by high-profile athletes, many are protesting for the same reasons, and they don't know what those reasons are.
All right. Well, we'll come back to talk about some more of that when we come back.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God and His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Jimmy DeYoung in Jerusalem, Israel. You often hear me on Stand in the Gap Today with Sam, Dave, and Gary. guess what? We're all coming to Israel. Love to have you come and go with us. The dates are March the 7th through the 21st. That will include 10 days in Israel, 4 days in Petra, one of the most unique cities in all the world. If you need more information, the itinerary, the exact dates, also the information about cost, call this number, 423-825-6247. That's 423-825-6247. Ask for Jody. She can give you all the information as Stand in the Gap Today and Prophecy Today go host a tour to Israel. Next year in Jerusalem, we're looking forward to you being here with us.
Back in 1993, MediShare was known as the best-kept secret in healthcare. But not anymore. Today, there are hundreds of thousands of Americans who've discovered what us long-timers have known since the beginning. MediShare is affordable healthcare that really works. The great thing is, we're not an insurance company. We're a nonprofit community, hundreds of thousands of honest, hardworking people who agree to share each other's medical bills. Every share goes to help a fellow member. And when we say affordable, we mean it's common for our members to save upwards of $500 a month. Best of all, MediShare is always open. You can join anytime. So how about now? Isn't it time you joined MediShare?
Call 844-45-BIBLE to find out how much you can save on your health care. MediShare, now available in Montana. Call 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, welcome back. In our first segment, my co-host, Dr. Keith Wiebe, and our special guest, Oscar Rivera, were just mentioning how important the national anthem and the emblem, the symbolism of our flag that stand for the things that unite us, that stands for our Constitution and the rule of law and government that has brought us together and made us such a great nation under God. And so we want to pick up with that, looking at the constitutional right to protect ourselves. And I want to officially welcome onto the program our special guest, Oscar Rivera. He's a retired lieutenant colonel of the Pennsylvania State Police. He's been involved in the state police for 25 years and involved in law enforcement and security in general for almost 30 years, believe it or not. And so welcome to the program, Oscar. Thank you so much for taking time to come and be on with us today to talk to our listeners about these important current events and topics that relate to us and our constitutional freedoms.
Thank you for having me, Isaac. Good to be with you.
Oscar, speaking as a law enforcement specialist, I guess I could call you, having spent so much of your life in this field, when you see some of the violent attacks happening around us, as we see in the news so often, from your law enforcement background and your point of view, do you think that tougher gun controls are the answer? Do you think they could help us? And maybe explain that a little bit, your reasoning for that.
So, Isaac, my short answer is no. I don't believe that tougher gun controls laws will help. And the reason I say this is because, I mean, you have to look at some of our larger cities in our nation, which possess some of the most strict gun control laws, and we can really ask ourselves and look at empirical data that indicates that, no, those laws have not helped. The problem whenever there's discussion about, that I find when there's discussion about stricter gun control, is that it almost always centers upon infringement of our Second Amendment rights, our constitutional right. So in other words, they're always trying to find a way to restrict the public's ability to obtain a firearm. Rarely does the conversation begin with addressing the behavior of the individual. So in my simple mind, I like to draw a simple parallel. Why is it that when people are killed or seriously injured by a motor vehicle, either intentionally or by accident, the conversation is never to enact laws that make it tougher for the masses to obtain a vehicle? Rather, mm-hmm. the laws that exist, to prosecute and alter the behavior of the responsible individual. Now, it would be fair for someone to say that I'm not comparing apples to oranges, and that's true. But it should be noted that annually, and these are statistics that I've looked at not for a while, but just that I'm familiar with because of what I've done in my life, on average, there are annually about 35,000 deaths involving vehicles and an average of about 32,000 deaths involving firearms each year. This includes accidents, suicides, acts of violence. So if we're truly concerned about the results of firearms ownership, why aren't we equally concerned about vehicle ownership? I know that's an overly simplistic view, but when you look at it that way, there are actually more motor vehicle deaths annually than there are gun deaths.
But that's a very good point, Oscar. When you mentioned cities, I thought of Chicago, a city with very strict gun control laws, and yet a lot of gun violence, over 3,000 people shot so far in 2017, over 500 people killed from being shot. Now, the gun control advocates would tell us that it's not fair to look at Chicago's violence because they're so close to the border of Indiana where it's much easier to get guns, they say. But what you're saying is that stricter gun laws do not make for decreased violence, if I'm understanding you correctly.
That's exactly what my position is, yes. So, you know, when you're talking about a city like Chicago, that's obviously a tragedy what's happening there. And as a former law enforcement officer, I know how serious law enforcement and their leadership take these kind of things. So I can only assume that the Chicago Police Department is doing the best it can to try to control the situation. But I also believe that there's something else that's happening here. This is an example of where politicians, and I'm not here to blame politicians. This is not what this discussion is about. But politicians on either side of the aisle are failing to look beyond their agenda when it comes to the issues. So I also believe that because Chicago is a city where the police department, rightly or not, has been involved in many police misconduct incidents, which have been highly publicized, it has created a situation where there's great distrust between the police and community. So this lack of trust makes it considerably more difficult for the work that police needs to do with the community to try to resolve the issues to actually come to fruition. So unfortunately, until the trust can be reestablished, it will be difficult to stem this violence. This makes the tragedy a lot worse because most of the people in the affected communities are not part of the problem, but are forced to live with it.
You know, Oscar, you're giving us some really helpful information from an insider point of view with your, you know, close to 30 years experience in law enforcement. You've graduated from the Pennsylvania State Police Academy, from the FBI National Academy, and other degrees. How do you feel when it seems like so much of what's put on the mainstream media about gun control is coming from celebrities who lecture us about our guns, you know, and owning guns, when in reality, many of them don't know what's going on and many of them pay for bodyguards who carry guns to protect them?
You know, that's an interesting point, Isaac. You started out the question by describing my experience in law enforcement. And even with that experience, there are still certain topics within law enforcement that I am somewhat reticent to speak about because sometimes I just don't know enough about it to speak smartly. So I always find it interesting that someone who has no clue about a particular topic chooses to speak on it as an authority. But here's what I really think about it. I think that somehow that in some ways we as a society bear part of the blame for this. Why? Because we place these celebrities upon such high pedestals, and that this includes athletes, that at times I think that they actually believe that they are authorities. In many cases, really, they're just being used by political parties as pawns to push their agendas. So when you talk about these celebrities who push for gun control, they are completely anti-firearm, anti-gun, and yet they maintain very well-armed bodyguards in close vicinity. To me, that's just another example and proof of their hypocrisy and their elitist attitude toward the common people. So really, what they're saying is they know what is best for us, but the rules that they want to apply to us don't apply to them. To me, that's a straight signal that we should not be listening to these folks.
And that's not just true about firearms where they're concerned. I think it's true about a lot of other things as well. Well, another argument, Oscar, that I have heard is, man alive, you don't want Joe average citizen, all of them, to be carrying guns because that's just plain dangerous to have that many people walking around with guns. Is it dangerous, do you think, to allow the average citizen to own and carry a weapon? Why not?
So in my experience, no. It is not. In my experience, the average American citizen who possesses a firearm does so for entirely legal pursuits. It's either sport, hunting, or self-protection. You know, I really hate to think that there's anything average about the individuals who have committed these large acts of violence using firearms. There is nothing
Good
average
point.
About them. There are clearly other issues. So to paint with a broad brush and say that because someone who clearly has an issue or some grudge acted in a particular way with a firearm, we should also put those restrictions that we want to place on that individual against the common citizen, that to me is wrong. So no, the average citizen, the average American, I forget what the statistics are. I think there are more guns owned by Americans than there are people in our country. Obviously, this is not creating a stem of violence. Now, believe me when I say that, one death from a gun is too much, but it's not creating the stem of violence that they want you to believe is occurring. So no, the average citizen is usually very responsible gun owner.
We're going to get into a whole segment about churches and how this relates to that. But recently, there was a bad guy who went into a church in Tennessee to try to shoot them, and an usher stopped him and actually went and retrieved a gun to hold him at bay. Can you think of scenarios like that? Have you seen those kinds of scenarios? And can you think of a situation where it is beneficial for the citizen to have a gun as well as, you know, to still rely upon the police for help?
So, Isaac, as far as getting into specific incidents, so, you know, my thought on this that, you know, unfortunately, really, in this day and age, as we know, there is a potential to become a victim of crime in a great many situations. I like to think that, you know, really, we don't live in Mayberry anymore. Andy Griffith and Barney Fife are not around the corner just trying to make things safe from no crime occurring. But, you know, almost on a daily basis, we hear of incidents like home invasions. So in the sanctity of your own home, you could become a victim. We hear carjackings. In your vehicle, you can become a victim. You can stumble upon a robbery at a bank or at a convenience store. So it is prudent to be prepared to protect yourself with a firearm or other means. I'm not saying it just has to be a firearm. However, I think it's important that we don't give the listeners the impression that they need to be fearful of being out and living their lives, but they should be prepared to protect themselves. Awareness is very important. But if you choose to do so with a firearm to protect yourself, it should be after proper familiarization and training. It can't be done haphazardly.
Mm-hmm. That is very good information, very important. And when we come back, we'll be looking at Christians, in particular our churches, what we can do to be prepared. And as Oscar has said, we should all be ready, be prepared as Christians. We want to trust God and do our best to follow him and also to be prepared. And what can we do as churches to prevent keep at bay an attack in one of our services or something of that sort. So please don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages. You'll want to hear what we have coming up next segment.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, welcome back to our program, and thanks so much for joining us. My co-host is Pastor Keith Wiebe, the Vice President of American Pastors Network, in charge of the chapter development. I'm Pastor Isaac Crockett from Hamburg Bible Church, and our special guest with us today is Oscar Rivera, retired Lieutenant Colonel of the Pennsylvania State Police, and he still currently works as the Vice President at WSK and Associates as a security and consulting firm there. And we've been talking about how we protect ourselves as citizens, as Christians, and really defending not just the Second Amendment, but the right to defend ourselves in general, and looking at what we do as churches as there are more and more shootings targeting Christians. But before we get back into that subject, that topic, I do want to thank you for being a part of our listening audience. And I remind you that if you would like to listen to this entire program again or see additional information or other resources, you could even share some of these topics that we're talking about in sound bites with friends. You can check out not just our website, standinthegapradio.net, or you could also get our mobile phone app, but you can also follow the American Pastors Network and Stand in the Gap Radio. You can follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and even some really nice resources on YouTube. And you can share those with people, even children or grandchildren, maybe that you would like them to know some of this information. You can share it through social media. So thanks so much for listening, and I hope that you'll follow us even online if you're somebody who is involved with social media. So we were talking about self-defense, but we really see a lot of public shootings now. And obviously, we're coming off of some really horrific ones, and they're happening more and more. Back in 2014, the New York Times had an article, and the title was "The FBI Confirms a Sharp Rise in Mass Shootings Since 2000." And it seems that in the last year or two especially, we seem to be hearing of more of these. Now, I wanted to ask our special guest, Oscar Rivera, in light of recent church shootings especially, as well as these other mass shootings, as a law enforcement official, as someone who has 25 years as in the state police, what is your opinion, what is your feeling on people carrying concealed weapons to public events, if allowed, or even carrying a concealed weapon to church or to a service for the sake of protection?
Well, certainly if someone wants to protect themselves with a firearm, they certainly have the right to do so. But I believe it is very important that if a person chooses to do so in this fashion, that they should do so only after the proper training experience. I believe I alluded to this earlier. And also after obtaining the proper permits for their jurisdiction. So in other words, I don't think people should just run to a local gun shop and purchase a firearm. That's not enough. Improperly handling a firearm could lead to unintentional injury to self or others. So you're actually becoming more of a danger to others and yourself than you were actually seeking to prevent. So I think it's very important that if you're going to protect yourself with a firearm, you do so after proper training. Also, with respect to carrying a firearm at a place like a church, I think the same applies. People should act in kind when going to church and carrying a firearm. However, I think there's a larger question when it comes to churches and private organizations. Do they want firearms carried in their churches? I suppose there are varying opinions on this. I know as a citizen what my opinion would be. That would be my hope that I could carry wherever I go. However, I can understand why certain public or private agencies don't accept this. So I think it's important for churches to have the conversation so that they know as a body how they want to approach this. I think it has to be very well. Go ahead, Keith.
No, that leads me, Oscar, just what you're saying, how you would respond to a church that put up a sign that said something like this is a gun-free zone. I think you've answered that. And you have led me to the next one. What advice do you have for churches to do what they can to prevent a mass shooting at their church? You know, Isaac and I are both pastors, and in the culture in which we live, this is something that is close to our hearts because we recognize, particularly when you take the kind of stand that Isaac and I would both take as pastors in our pulpit, some of the things that we would preach on, we might become targets in our ministries. So what kind of advice do you have for churches and how they can prevent this kind of thing? What kind of attention should a church be giving to its own policy of protection and keeping their people safe?
Well, that's an interesting question, Keith. You know, you mentioned the gun-free zone signs. I think, you know, and my thought on these signs have always been they're only as effective as the people who read them and their willingness to abide by them. So what I would say is a criminal is not going to be willing to abide by those signs.
Bad guys are going to pay attention. That's right.
Right. The people who are abide, they're not the people who are going to be your issue. But when you're talking about prevention of these shootings at churches, I think it's important, again, for churches to have the conversation, but also for the awareness to be there. I think a lot of churches, again, going back to my Mayberry comment, are still operating under the assumption that they're a safe environment. People come there to seek respite. They're not coming to create issues. But you never know what people will bring from their private lives, or someone coming wanting to create an issue, gather attention, will try to do to even a church. So I think it's important for churches to look at what the risks are in their communities and then determine, based upon those risks, what their vulnerabilities are at their churches, and then act as a body to try to close those vulnerabilities.
That's a lot of good information for our listeners, Oscar, and I hope those folks listening today who maybe can share this with pastors or leaders at their churches will do so. You know, talking as a pastor who's tried to work through some of this, and I know I have still a lot to go, but thinking about different things that can be set up, you know, security cameras or security systems and, you know, plans and just planning ahead, Some people might argue that we're not trusting in the Lord if we do this. We're trusting in, you know, these systems or video cameras. We're trusting all of our plans. Speaking as someone who's a strong believer in the Lord, as well as our duty to do our best for the Lord, how would you respond to that that argument that, well, maybe we won't trust the Lord if we're planning ahead to protect ourselves?
So, first of all, let me address the first part of the question about security cameras or different tools. So whatever a church would choose to use to try to protect themselves, provide better security for themselves, let's say during a service or whatnot, must also be accompanied by the appropriate monitoring. So if you're going to have cameras that you want to be able to monitor the exterior of the church, the entrances of the church, in hopes of preventing a mass shooting or any other type of crime, you need to have the people monitoring actively while that's happening. Otherwise, cameras are just a very nice tool that are there basically recording what happened. You want to prevent the event from happening, so you need to have active monitoring, so you need to have people assigned to do those things. But with respect to it being showing our lack of faith in the Lord, if we do those things as a church, I completely disagree with that. I like what James tells us. Faith without works is dead, right? Hmm. So I'm confident the Lord wants us to be safe, at church or home or whatever. But he also expects us to put our faith to work towards that safety. In other words, we have to do a lot of work about that. Yes, we should trust the Lord, pray, ask that he will guide us along that way. But to sit back and do nothing with it is just like James tells us. If your brother comes to you and he says that he's hungry, and you say, bless you, and we hope that the best for you, and send him away, and he's still hungry, we've done nothing. So we need to take the action ourselves.
Good, Oscar. So from your background and experience with law enforcement, talk to us a little bit about the communication that ought to exist between a church and their leadership and the police in their community. How should that work? Why is that important?
I think one of the best things that churches could do, and I'll say this while I'm thinking about it, Isaac's done it at our church, Hamburg Bible Church, is to connect with the police department. You know, building relationships with the police at your local police agency is a good way to obtain guidance on how to better protect your church. In many cases, they have community services officers who can provide a cursory review of your overall safety and provide the guidance and case-specific solutions that you need to protect yourselves. You really don't want to get to know your police department for the first time during a tragic event. Okay. Having built relationships ahead of time goes a long way toward helping to mitigate and to prevent some crime. You want your church to be able to be a place where officers feel comfortable parking their vehicles for traffic enforcement. Some parishioners may not like that, but you want the police to feel comfortable. You want to be a place where they feel that they can come and stop by for a cup of coffee and discuss what's going on, a place to come and do their reports. So it's important to build those relationships because it pays you back and having them connected to you as well as part of the community.
Well, you know, here at American Pastors Network, that is one of our foundational beliefs, is to bridge this gap with churches and civil authorities. And law enforcement, of course, are on the front line of that, and how important it is for us as pastors who are ministers of the gospel to work together with those who are ministers of justice to see God's work being done. Our civil authorities are ordained by God and are used by God. So are there any other tips that you might have for a pastor who's looking for a way to reach out to the law enforcement community?
I think that there are various times throughout the year that are beneficial for, Memorial Day, 4th of July, that you could take the opportunity to invite police and emergency personnel to your churches for services that you may have and take the time to honor them. A lot of times I think of police as the forgotten community out there because they're just expected to be out there doing their job. And the public should feel that, expect that of their servants. But I think it's also important for churches to take the step to reach out to them because a lot of times they're too busy to do it the opposite way.
Well, I like that, the forgotten community. So don't forget that, to think about and pray for your forgotten community, and as a church, find ways to reach out to them. Well, as always, we want to finish our program with biblical solutions, so we'll be right back in just a brief, short time out here to talk some more and to give some resources to help you. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this break to talk about some solutions to these issues we've brought up today.
Okay.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE. Now available in Montana. Call 844-45-BIBLE.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, I want to thank all of you for listening to us today. And as we've gone through the different segments, this is the time now where we come at the end of our program to looking for answers or solutions to some of the issues of the day. And I think throughout the program, our special guest has actually been giving us quite a bit of good information and answers. But I want to thank you for listening to us. And Dr. Keith Wiebe and I are speaking with former Lieutenant Colonel of the Pennsylvania State Police, Oscar Rivera, about solutions to gun violence, how to protect ourselves, and particularly how it relates to churches and to Christians. And, you know, here at the American Pastors Network, we believe that part of the role of government is to work with individuals, families, and churches in a way that provides law and order. We need civil authority to protect the innocent and to punish the evildoers. And so we want to look at this and see what our government is doing. And I would like to ask our special guest, Oscar, in your opinion, what are some things or some steps that our government can do or should do to restore the rule of law when in areas or in times when it feels like it's gotten out of control? And do you think that our current president, President Trump, is making steps in the right direction as president in leading our nation in this direction?
Well, I believe, first of all, that as far as restoring the rule of law, our government will continue to be ineffective in this, as we've seen, unless they can find ways to get beyond partisanship, ideology, and agenda. This applies to both sides of the aisle. I'm not picking on anyone in particular. The emphasis needs to be finding on common sense solutions which don't violate our constitutional rights. But if they can't set agendas aside, they're really not interested in a solution. With respect to the president taking steps to enforce that rule of law, I think that I've seen some steps in the right direction with respect to our Department of Justice, the appointment of Jeff Sessions, for instance. The DOJ seems to be more focused upon criminal prosecution in a just fashion, rather than being driven by political agenda. They're trying to enforce existing laws as I see it, rather than trying to justify why certain laws shouldn't be enforced for certain segments of society, even when they have clearly violated the law. So yes, I am seeing some positive steps, and hopefully they'll continue, but time will tell.
Oscar, you have you've kind of directed us into the previous segment, particularly to the importance of churches, thinking through what they do, having a plan, And I have really appreciated your emphasis, and you mentioned this two or three times, on people being trained to use their firearms, to go into this thing with some good common sense. I wonder, what about families? Should a family have some kind of an action plan for the case of an emergency, and what would you suggest that might look like?
So churches are part of our extended family, right? Right. Churches and families both, I do believe, should have some emergency plans to know how to act in certain emergency situations. In our homes, in our churches, we have a responsibility to try to protect ourselves against existing threats. So because families and churches both have finite resources, they should really be guided by their actions plans based upon what existing threats exist or risk exists in their communities, at their churches, at their homes. And then determine what vulnerabilities you have in your families, in your homes, at church, and try to provide solutions for that. So in other words, you don't build a moat around your home to try to protect against an invading horde of barbarians if you don't have barbarians in the area. You need to look and see what the real issues are. But the first steps in protections are always doing your homework, determining what the threats are. So yes, simple evacuation plans are important. All hazards plans, which address something as simple as if something happens during a church service, where people would evacuate to outside by having it designated areas. We all know that in our churches, families are separated from their children during the service. Young children are a different location. But just even having something as simple as the church defining where families will meet up during an emergency will help with those plans and help to ensure people are safe.
All right. Those are some really helpful tips. And I think also what you said about fostering a relationship with the local police, could that also be part of the plan in talking to them and getting advice from them? And if so, what's the best thing to do? Have a pastor call the local police department, or what would you suggest on that?
Most of our churches are located in a community, a city, a small town, a township, and there's always a responsible police agency. Yes, the pastors should take the steps of contacting the local police department, speaking to the leadership, expressing their concerns, asking for assistance, and asking for that guidance. And then even when you develop your plans, share them with your police department so they know what actions you will take during an emergency so they know how to react, because often you'll have to enact your plans before police can arrive. So it's important that they too are aware what your actions are and even have a copy of your plan, so that they know how to respond and how you will be reacting in certain situations.
All right. Well, some really helpful tips there. And I know, as Oscar alluded to earlier, I have a big help in our church because I have Oscar Rivera in the church, and we live on the foothills of the Appalachian Trail. And we have had some trail hikers come through before in different situations. A lot of them come, but we've had some that were not in the right state of mind or just had other things going on because of substance abuse. And it's nice to have him there. But we have also fostered a relationship with our local community, had police officers come in and teach our children some of these safety things, as well as just not long ago, just a few days ago, I had a counseling situation that was coming my way, and I expected it could become volatile. And I talked to the police ahead of time, and we were, ready to help each other with whatever might happen. But I could wholeheartedly agree with what you've mentioned. Keith, do you have any comments you would like to add to this before I would like to also ask you to close our program in prayer for the day?
Yeah, I think this has been just an excellent discussion. I was recalling a time in our church when we were picketed by that Phelps bunch from Kansas because we allegedly were too soft on homosexuality, and that itself is quite a joke. But shortly after we learned they were coming, the policemen showed up at our house, at our place at the church. They already knew about it. They already had a plan in place to keep everybody apart, to provide safety, and it was going to be on a Sunday evening so folks could come and go to the Sunday evening service without that being interrupted. And they were most, most helpful in helping us work together with it. And we have found that to be the case, Oscar, as you alluded, even in the ongoing security plans that we have. We have a Christian school. We have security things in place there. We've had drills with our faculty. They know where to take the kids. We've talked to our church congregation about, like you said, where we meet up as families, what needs to happen, what kind of exits are available, what do we use, what kind of security is in place during a service. And it's a picture of the times in which we live. God has called us in these days in which we live to make the gospel plain. He has called on us to lift up Christ. He has given us officers of our government to keep us safe, to provide for law and order, to be a blessing to those that do good, to bring the sword against those who would do evil. And all of this, I think, points to a picture where we work together. We are co-laborers together. Let's pray together. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for our government. Thank you for Oscar and other officers like him. Thank you, Father, for the privilege that we have in our nation of worshiping you freely, the privilege that we have also of being protected. Worshiping, as I used to hear folks, the older folks in our church at home pray, that we may worship undisturbed and unmolested. Give us your blessing today, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Well, Keith and Oscar, thank you so much for being on the program today. And thank you out there for listening to us. Please tune in again on radio, online, or on your smartphone app and stand in the gap for the Lord today.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.americanpastorsnetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.